A former advisor to President Carter said that President-elect Barack Obama now has a rushing freight train of decisions bearing down on him. Today on Please Explain, we'll talk about the transition process, how information and power are handed from one administration to the next, and how thousands of decisions will be made now and between now and inauguration day, January 20th, 2009. Joining us are Paul C. Light, the Goddard Professor of Public Service at New York University's Robert F. Wagner Graduate School of Public Service, and Martha Joynt Kumar, a political scientist, professor at Towson University. Her book, The White House World, is about the transitions to power of seven administrations. Welcome to our show.
Nice to be here.
And Martha, you're in the basement of the White House right now?
Yes, that's correct.
What are you doing in the basement?
I've been here since 1995 and watching the press and the White House, the public aspects of the White House, and I use that as a basis for the writing that I do.
Do they let you out to go to the inauguration balls?
Well, I go out to the various events and where the president is. I do the daily briefings and talk to reporters about their work. And my next book is going to be on the White House press corps, so I'm sitting among the tribe.
Well, talking about that, Dee Dee Myers once described the presidential transition process, at least for the first Clinton administration, as hell. Does that more or less sum up the complexity and difficulties, or has it differed a great deal from one administration to another?
It is different depending upon how they organized it. In the Clinton case, she and other senior White House staff were appointed 5 days before they came into office in the inauguration.
So, well, why did they take so long?
Because the president was President-elect Clinton was interested in appointing the cabinet first. And what he neglected is that when you appoint your White House staff, you're appointing your decision-making system, and you need that decision-making system in place before you start picking your cabinet. Because in his case, when he figured out that he wanted to do have a woman as Attorney General and chose Zoe Baird, and she had illegal aliens, illegals working for her, that turned out to be a huge problem for them because she was the chief. She would have been the chief law enforcement officer. And if he had had the council personnel, political people, chief of staff, all of them in place, they would have been able to weigh that and see that that was a problem. And the Bush people, when they set up their system, and which they did the White House staff first, even though they only had 37 days. They had their chief of staff right at the beginning and set up ground rules for the appointment process. And they told everybody that they were working on an honor system and that if it turned out that there was information that they did not know about that was important to their nomination and that was negative, they would simply cut them loose. And so when they had an appointee who turned out to have illegals, then they cut her loose and the story lasted for 2 days, whereas it was many days for the Clinton administration for the Zoe Baird nomination.
Although I'm assuming, knowing what I know about the Obama group, they've been so efficient in this campaign that they have not waited until the last minute.
Yeah, they have been working. I mean, John Podesta has been working since the summer, and he's certainly a person who knows the White House well and knows the administration well because he came in at the beginning of the Clinton administration and knows what problems they had coming in, and then he was the chief of staff going out. So he had a good handle on what the programs and positions were.
Paul Light, before the transition begins, doesn't the whole election campaign apparatus have to be dismantled? Does this put a lot of people out of jobs?
Actually, the campaign apparatus has to be integrated with the transition planning apparatus. Where Democrats have failed in the past, both Carter and Clinton, was in not integrating the two teams. And the campaign people come into office and say, hey, you know, we got this guy elected. We want to be part of the transition. And oftentimes they'll dispose of the transition plans that have been carefully developed and start from scratch. That's part of what happened in the messy transition surrounding Clinton, a lot of infighting there. So you're trying to integrate rather than infight. Yes, you get rid of a lot of people, but some of them come back as presidential appointees of one kind or another.
And the president will have 3,500 to 4,000 positions to be filled.
Well, so. You know, that number kind of varies. You know, there are 10,000 or so full and part-time positions, including memberships on boards of one kind or another. I generally count about 3,000 political positions that are full-time, 500 to 700 that will go to the Senate for confirmation, and it's a nightmare no matter which one you get, just because the process is so laden with red tape.
Although it'll be easier if because both houses are of the same party as the president, so I assume there's going to be a lot of rubber stamping. But what happens to all of the stuff that they've been using, the computers, the fax machines, the Blackberries? What happens to all those T-shirts and buttons? Are they going to be sold the way they were during the campaign, or do they just simply go into some garbage dump?
Maybe they become souvenirs that they auction off or raffle off. Who knows? I mean, they'll figure out something to do with them. Maybe donate them to the Salvation Army. Maybe donate them to you know, various organizations that recycle technology. They're not going to throw them all away, that's for sure.
Martha, Barack Obama broke all kinds of fundraising records, and he almost definitely still has some cash on hand. Does the campaign have to spend that now? Can it be kept for the next election campaign?
The Bush people, what they did, but it was their transition money. They had some transition money left, and they used it to set up a website, which ultimately became results.gov.
What about campaign debt? How do politicians raise money for that? Hillary Clinton had about $9.5 million in unpaid campaign bills when she ended her campaign in June. Is it easier for the losing campaign to close down than the winning one, or
well,
vice versa?
They've had this a much smaller operation for the McCain operation, and yes, they are shutting down. I know one of the things that our project provided is we provided a library for both candidates, and I got a call from the McCain people asking if we wanted our books back because they were shutting down everything.
It's been reported that the Republican National Committee is trying to reclaim some of the $150,000 wardrobe that was bought for Governor Palin. Is that unprecedented?
I think the whole wardrobe issue was somewhat unprecedented.
Uh-huh. Well, a number. There seem to be
on eBay.
Yeah. Seem to be a number of things that are unprecedented. A number of now former McCain campaign aides have publicly turned against Governor Sarah Palin, and that seemed to me rather unusual as well.
Well, they do turn. There's a lot of gossip in the losing campaign about who did what to whom.
So there's finger-pointing and blaming?
Yes,
Think
about it, you know, people who have worked as consultants and who are going to continue to work as consultants have a stake in the campaign loss not being put on their shoulders.
There are reports that Barack Obama's campaign strategist David Axelrod will take a position as a senior advisor in the new administration. Where do you think most of Senator McCain's advisors will go now? Back to the private sector, to think tanks, to universities?
Some will return to their previous posts, and some will get in line for a presidential appointment. It varies greatly. Some are just credentialing themselves. They'll be on transition teams crawling about the executive branch, and want to put that on their resume. We've got a fair number of positions open for appointees. So there'll be some back and forthing in coming months as people position themselves. One note about campaign debt, you can close down your campaign, but you can't get rid of your debt. John Glenn was paying off his debt for 20 years from the 1984 campaign, and I suspect that Hillary Clinton will be paying down that debt for 10 to 15 years. It's just not easy to raise money after you lose.
Yeah.
My guests on Please Explain are Paul C. Light and Martha Joint Kumar. We're talking about the presidential transition process. The third player in the process, actually, is the president, right? The President Bush began preparing last spring for the transition. On October 9th, he signed an executive order to begin the transition. So have some White Houses been more cooperative than others?
Well, I think this one is different because there is a commitment in all parts of the government to start it earlier. In 2004, the Congress passed the Intelligence Reform and Terrorism Prevention Act, which allowed for earlier clearance for people who are going to be on the transition team. So instead of starting after the election to begin putting in names for clearance, that act provided that they could come in after the conventions when you had two major party candidates. Those candidates could put in names. And so that process has started approximately 2 months earlier.
You know, the Bush administration has been celebrating its great contributions to the transition. And there is some truth to the fact that, you know, they're working hard to make it as smooth as possible. But the Obama people have done so much work in advance preparing for the transition that they don't need as much information from the Bush people. I think the Bush administration has tried hard here, and they've been very forthcoming. They have implemented laws that were passed to improve the transition, and they deserve some credit. But to a certain extent, if your transition team needs a lot of help from the outgoing administration, you're already in trouble. You ought to know the positions that are open for appointment. You ought to know what's happening in the departments. And to be quite candid, you know, there's a lot of stuff happening in the departments right now by Bush political people that the Obama people will want to stop. And that doesn't exactly create a climate of camaraderie between the incoming and outgoing.
At the same time, we're talking about a significant moment in American history. Some historians are comparing this transition to Lincoln's or FDR's.
You know, I think it's an extraordinarily difficult transition, and I have said that it's certainly the most difficult since Lincoln. I mean, between the day Lincoln was elected and inaugurated, seven states left the Union. I think FDR.
We're not going to see that here.
Yeah. Well, Alaska could take a trip out of the Union. They've had that little tradition. You know, I think FDR's transition was extraordinarily difficult. I think this one has a little more complexity. You know, FDR wasn't fighting, the U.S. wasn't fighting two wars at the time, and there was an extraordinarily high unemployment rate to deal with, 25% at the time, but we seem to be doing everything we can right now to catch up to that. Unemployment up to date is 6.5%. I just think Obama has a range of challenges that are extraordinarily difficult, and it is one tough transition, that's for sure.
We have to take a little break. We'll come back with more and calls from our listeners. Our number here is 212-433-9692. That's 212-433-WNYC. We're talking about the transition on today's Please Explain with Paul C. Light, Paulette Goddard, Professor of Public Service at New York University's Robert F. Wagner Graduate School of Public Service, and Dr. Martha Joint Kumar, professor in the Department of Political Science at Townsend University and director of the White House Transition Project, a nonpartisan organization which provides information on past presidential transitions and the workings of the White House for incoming administrations. And we're back with Please Explain with Dr. Martha Joint Kumar and Professor Paul C. Light. And we are inviting your calls at 212-433-9692. What's the very first thing that happens for the president-elect? Does security increase immediately once he becomes the clear winner?
He's had a great deal of security all the way along the line. His security began earlier than I think any other candidate. And
well, there have already been, there's already a death threat situation.
Right. Yeah, so so they started the security early. So I think he's always had a great deal of security.
Now,
briefings began, and the briefings began early. And so there were briefings yesterday. Then he's going to start with the announcements of the White House staff, and we see that those have begun. And then after the White House staff, then you start getting into decisions on cabinet and perhaps what his some of his priorities, policy priorities, are going to be.
Well, where are they working out of now? They're obviously not working out of their own campaign headquarters.
The General Services Administration, which is in charge of property for the federal government, has leased 120,000 square feet of office space in downtown Washington. They turned the keys to the office over to the Obama people once the election results were clear. The General Services Administration, believe it or not, is the first organization besides the media to say that there's been a winner. And once they decide that there's been a winner, they turn over the keys to this office space, and they've already talked with Obama. They also talked to McCain about what kind of computer system they wanted, sort of how they wanted the office set up, and that's where the transition is moving, although there'll be a significant presence of transition people in Chicago for a while.
Mm-hmm. Now, you mentioned that the president is likely to push forward some of initiatives that Barack Obama might not be pleased with. Are there any rules regarding this sort of thing during the transition period?
One president at a time. That's the rule. And the president-elect is not going to be involved in making decisions as far as anything that's official, even working together with the president. For example, Franklin Roosevelt, whose transition in 1933 that Paul was talking about, that transition is a much longer transition because it went from November to March 4th when presidents then were inaugurated.
And there were real problems between Hoover and FDR, weren't there?
Yeah, and Hoover, FDR did not want to take part in doing anything until he became president. Otherwise, you become part of the problem.
Right. You know, you have to avoid these entanglements. Obama would be making a significant mistake to engage in negotiations with the Bush administration over economic stimulus, for example. I mean, he'll have quiet influence here on what the lame duck Congress might do about stimulus, but Martha's quite right that there's one president at a time, and Obama's got to be careful about not being seen as somehow usurping the Bush administration's authority or being trapped into supporting policies that he would rather not support and would like to change.
Well, I could see a situation in any transition where one president sets all sorts of booby traps for the next one if the next one is in a different party, and a fair amount of time can be spent by the incoming president just undoing what's been done in the lame duck months.
Finding them. That can be one of the difficult ones.
Finding them? Has that happened in the past?
I'm going to have to leave you in just a moment, but there is already a watch underway in the Obama transition, taking a look at regulations that are moving forward under Bush, looking at executive directives that have moved forward. You know, the last few months of an administration are really quite remarkable for the activity involved. A lot of regulations moving forward, executive orders, pardons. The Bush administration will be raising money for the Bush Library and so forth. And so the Obama people are setting up a watch program to make sure that they know what's going on. That hardly assures that kind of smooth collegial transition that we've been talking about. At any rate, I'm going to turn this over to Martha.
Yeah, thank you for being with us. Okay. Paul Light is Paulette Goddard Professor of Public Service at New York University's Robert F. Wagner Graduate School of Public Services. Dr. Martha Joint Kumar remains with us. She's professor in the Department of Political Science at Towson University and director of the White House Transition Project. The first thing that Barack Obama did was announce that Rahm Emanuel would be his chief of staff. Is that usually the way it's done?
You want to have the chief of staff come very early. If that appointment is not made, what in effect you're doing is not setting up your decision-making system. That is what a chief of staff represents. And the chief of staff is a person that you want to have, someone who knows the president well, who knows what kind of information he wants, how he wants it, whether he likes long meetings, short meetings, does he like to read stuff, talk to a small group of people, how does he like to get the information, and someone with experience in a White House. In a White House decision making, so that he knows from the past what things work and what don't. And in Rahm Emanuel's case, he also brings a knowledge of the House of Representatives and a whole set of relationships with the Democratic leadership there and with the membership as well.
Well, is he the key? Because the senior staff on the transition team are Chris Liu, executive director.
Mm-hmm. And he has Senate experience and knows the president well. They were law school classmates.
So we also have to hope that everybody plays well with each other. I assume there is a certain amount of power struggles that go on, jockeying for position at this early stage, because it will set the tone for what follows.
That varies in the administration. As Paul said, that was a problem in both the Clinton and the Carter administrations. But in the Reagan one and also in George W. Bush, that was not much of an issue because they had the transition team coordinate on a regular basis, daily, in fact, with the campaign and the transition people coordinated on appointments and on what kinds of information they were finding.
I understand that Michelle and Barack Obama are going to the White House on Monday. For what? To measure for the drapes?
Yeah, to see those drapes, decide if they want new ones or not. There is a traditional meeting that takes place. Usually it's later, and so I think fortunately it's come up quickly this time. I think everybody recommended that it be an early one so that they could talk to one another and in a private way about the office. Whatever President Bush thinks that it's crucial for Obama to know or tell him what he offers him, and the same for Michelle Obama. I received a call from Laura Bush, who invited her to come, and I think they'll find that in both cases there's a lot of work that's being done gathering information that will be useful for them.
Well, you said that. It's one administration at a time, and yet we have Barack Obama meeting with economic advisors today and speaking about what's happening in just a little while, in fact, in about 25 minutes or so.
Correct.
I wonder whether conflicting policy will already start happening. And what happens when foreign heads of state want to talk to Barack Obama? Will we see complications in protocol?
In Clinton's case, he met with Mexican president in January of 1993 to talk about NAFTA. They met at the governor's mansion in Texas. Ann Richards was then the governor. Eisenhower, between the election and the inauguration, went to Korea because he said he would go to Korea as one of his campaign pledges. And so there are certainly tensions that can exist between the incumbent administration and the incoming one that relates to foreign policy.
What is the role of the incoming First Lady during this time? Is she still just the adoring wife?
At this point, she had said during the campaign, I think, that she'd never been to the White House. So for her, it's going to be an initial visit. Perhaps she was there in some event, but I remember hearing her saying that, and I thought that's what a change that's going to be to come in and see not only the official part of the White House, but she certainly hasn't seen the private parts of the White House on the second floor, where the family lives and where the president has an office where he can work at night, and then they have guest quarters too, among them the Lincoln bedroom.
Just one more thing, and we have very little time. There used to be Kremlinologists that would try to read what was going on. Are there people who will read about the future of the Obama administration from the people who are on his transition team?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, they're trying to figure out who's going to come into the White House. Some of the transition people will, and some of them won't. So in the transition, you have to make a transition from your campaign people to the transition teams, like the agency review teams, and then establishing your White House staff and your administration.
Martha, we have to leave it there. Martha joined Kumar, political scientist and professor at Townsend University. Her book, The White House World, is about the transition of power of seven administrations. Thank you so much for being on Please Explain.
My pleasure.